In 1977, I was 16, and I discovered the miniseries. Like many of you, I bet I spent the cold and dark nights of January that year glued to my television watching a show called Roots, the story of several generations of a single family, all descendants of one African slave, Kunta Kinte, as they suffered the trials and the tribulations of life on two different continents. It was an incredible story, and in 8 episodes that spanned a little more than a century in time, I learned an awful lot about American history from the perspective of its black population, certainly a history that I was only very vaguely aware of at the time. Now, as opposed to regular television dramas, like, say, Coronation Street, which apparently have absolutely no end in sight, the miniseries is a genre unto itself because it tells its story in a very focused and fixed number of episodes. Now, today, Netflix has really built its reputation by excelling in this format, recognizing, perhaps, that since the attention span of many of us has shrunk in the social media age, this is the way to go. And maybe there's truth in that. Now, before you wonder why I'm rambling on about the mini-series today, it's not because I'm feeling particularly nostalgic for the golden age of television. It's because every 3 years, and that means this year, the church interrupts our regularly scheduled broadcast of the Gospel of St. Mark right in the middle of it so that we can spend 5 whole weeks watching a mini-series of sorts drawn from the 6th chapter of the Gospel of St. John. It begins with the story that we have just heard today, the miraculous feeding of the 5,000, which is the only miracle story that is found in all 4 Gospels. Now, that obviously makes it important in and of itself. But why? Why does the church all around the globe this morning make this shift? It's not because Mark's Gospel is too short and we'd run out of lessons before the year was over, but it's because St. John digs much, much deeper into one of the central mysteries of our faith, more so than the other evangelists do, a mystery that is at the very heart of who we are as Christians, the Eucharist. So over these 5 weeks, the Gospels become a mini-series of sorts, helping us to unpack what the Eucharist is, why we celebrate it, and what we derive from it. And in today's opening episode, St. John introduces us to the fundamental idea that the Eucharist is about generosity. Whatever happened on that hillside 2,000 years ago, a miracle people have tried to explain throughout the ages, the main point, I think, was this. It was rooted in compassion and in generosity. Jesus felt for that crowd, a crowd that, if truth be told, was becoming a royal pain in the neck. Since we started reading Mark's Gospel at the end of last year, the crowds have been a central character in this drama. For all intents and purposes, they've been stalking Jesus. They've been so persistent in tracking him down that on several occasions he's even tried to escape, tries to find places where he could get away on his own. And that is exactly how this morning's story opens as well, with an obsessive crowd following him because they had seen the signs that he was doing. He was turning water into wine, curing a paralyzed man here, curing the son of a royal official there. They were hounding him in the hope that he was going to perform some amazing feat for them too. Do something spectacular, Jesus, so that I can go back home and regale my friends. Now, on the one hand, Jesus clearly felt for these people. Otherwise, he would not have been performing the signs of healing that he did. On the other hand, however, He was apparently getting tired of this routine, and he did try to flee from it. He crossed the Sea of Galilee. He climbed up a mountain, and they just kept on coming. And so, before we get to the Eucharistic context for this morning's gospel, St. John is first forcing us to ask ourselves a difficult question, and it's this: why do we persist in following Jesus? What do we hope to get from him, if anything at all? Why are we even here when so many others choose not to be? It's not a question that we generally ask ourselves, but I think that it's one that is worth reflecting on if we really want to go deeper into our life of faith and specifically into the mystery of the Eucharist. Why does this matter to me? Well, whatever our answer, whatever the reason why the crowds had gathered, we are told that Jesus felt sorry for them. He knew that they were hungry. And so he asked one of those leading questions that must have driven his disciples crazy at times: where are we going to buy bread for these people to eat? Now, I suspect if I'd been standing with the 12 that day, my answer would have been, why are we buying them bread at all? We didn't ask them to chase us all around Galilee. But of course, when Jesus asks a question like this, he already knows the answer. And the answer isn't necessarily obvious. Philip, always the practical one, he tries to fix the problem, and he begins calculating the immense costs associated with feeding 5,000 people, because details matter. Logistics matter. But that wasn't Jesus' point. Jesus understood that in the end, the crowd that was following him was indeed hungry, but not just for the perishable food that you could buy. They wanted so much more than this life had given them thus far. He understood that their hunger and ours is only truly satisfied by him. But how is that going to happen, especially after they see him no more? Well, Andrew, he takes a different approach from his buddy Philip to solving this problem. It could be argued it was a ridiculous approach, really, but it's one that sets the scene for this remarkable miracle to occur. He produces a young lad, and his paltry lunch of 5 barley loaves, the poor man's bread, and a couple of fish. And then we are told Jesus did something immensely significant before that crowd of 5,000. It's something, however, that is very easily overlooked, especially if we only focus on the astonishing detail or lack of detail in the miracle itself. You see, there is a code that is hidden in St. John's words this morning. It's a code that the first Christians would have recognized immediately the very first time that they heard this story. We are told that Jesus took the loaves, he gave thanks, and he distributed them. Sounds pretty simple, doesn't it? Take, thank, distribute, big deal. But doesn't that just sound a little bit familiar to you as well? Doesn't that also sound like the very same thing that we do every single day here in this cathedral? Remember that on the night that he was betrayed, Jesus took bread, and when he had given thanks, he gave it to his disciples and said, "This is my body. Take, give thanks, distribute." When St. John tells the story of the Last Supper, you may recall that he doesn't actually speak about the meal itself, does he? The only thing he describes from the Last Supper is the washing of the disciples' feet. So it's actually today's gospel story of the feeding of the 5,000 that introduces us to what St. John understands the Eucharist to be. It's in this long 6th chapter of his gospel, the chapter that we will be reading over these coming weeks, that John slowly and carefully explains for us what the Eucharist is and why it is so essential to those of us who persist in following this man Jesus. So when over these next weeks you hear Jesus calling himself the bread of life, and when he startles you a little saying that we must eat his flesh, and that whoever eats of his flesh and comes to him will never be hungry, just keep casting your mind back into today's opening scene, to that hillside by the Sea of Galilee where Jesus fed 5,000, because the meaning of the Eucharist begins there, not at the table of the Last Supper. It begins with a little boy's simple lunch offered from his poverty, prayed over, and then selfishly shared. For John, the Eucharist, first of all, is about generosity. In that child's gift, and what Jesus does with it, are the roots of the mystery that we are going to imitate in a few moments at this table, when we share a meal that satisfies so much more than our physical hunger. In fact, I would suggest it won't satisfy your physical hunger. In the Eucharist, we remember and we celebrate the generosity of a God who freely gives us the grain and the grapes and everything else in the whole universe, for that matter, in the first place, no strings attached, who gives human beings the skill to cultivate them and the ability to transform them into food and drink, who then, with a very few words, "This is my body, this is my blood," becomes mysteriously present in such an ordinary meal. This is the generosity of our God, that something as base and plain and simple as bread and wine are not beneath God's dignity, but actually become the vehicle by which he becomes one with us and we become one with God. Whatever else it is, and that's something I will leave to the preachers over the coming weeks to explain, the Eucharist is about the lavish generosity of a God who is willing to be placed into the rough hands and onto the tongues of saints and sinners alike. But it doesn't end there. The God who is so generous with us, who mysteriously takes up his dwelling place within us in this sacrament, then calls us to be generous as well. A week ago tonight, our city reeled in disbelief when 13 people were shot, 2 were killed in a random act of violence. Amidst the fear and the anxiety surrounding that horrific event, the generosity of ordinary people shone through. God shone through them. The person who put aside her own legitimate fears for her safety and immediately performed CPR on the stranger who fell beside her. The man who on Monday morning bought a $100 gift card at a coffee shop at the corner of Chester and Danforth and then said to the barista, "Just spend it on anyone until it runs out." The community that chose to struggle to understand the mental illness of the man who perpetrated this dreadful act rather than rush to blame people who shared his religion and ethnicity. These were acts of divine generosity. They imitated the lavish generosity of our God and, may I suggest, the generosity of a child who gave away the little that he had to feed a bunch of strangers. You see, the Eucharist is not just a meal. It's a way of living. To live Eucharistically means taking what God freely gives us every day, constantly thanking him for those gifts, and then sharing them with others. That's living the Eucharist. Generously lavishing our time and our talents and our treasures on the lonely, on the sick, the suffering, the misunderstood, the outcasts, and the unloved. In short, we who will be fed with the Eucharist in just a few moments become the Eucharist for those whom we will meet when we leave these cathedral doors today. I will not pretend that I entirely understand the nature of the miracle that is reported in today's gospel. But I suspect that this much is true. that the generosity of a single child who shared what little he had was probably then imitated by the others who were sitting around him on the hillside that day. That at least one of the miracles that God performed that morning was to open the hearts of the crowd so that they too were moved to share from their poverty. And now it's our turn. So let's not be discouraged by the little that we think we have to offer. God can make more than enough from the gifts that he has given to us, so that we, who will in a moment eat this sacred meal, can become bread ourselves and feed the hungry outside our doors. Amen.